I'm gonna sit at the welcome table. I'm gonna sit.
Creating a connection between museum visitors and history can often be a difficult task. How do you get someone to personally relate with an event or object from 50, 100, or even 200 years ago? One of the ways the National Museum of American History attempts to better engage the public is through the use of unique live performances here on the museum floor. In this month's History Explorer podcast, I'll be speaking with Xavier Carnegie, an actor here at the museum who has been involved with several different historic theater programs. Xavier discusses his role as a civil rights activist in the Join the Students Sit-ins program, and how that program specifically attempts to teach history through personal, engaging theater.
I'm gonna get my civil rights.
My name is Samuel Xavier Carnegie, and I started out here as an actor for, I guess, about 4.5 years. Did various programs, including the Join the Student Citizens program, which is the one that I've kind of, I guess, been the most associated with. And then recently I became kind of in charge of all of the theater programs. Mm-hmm. So the title is creative director, and that means a lot of different things. I'm still acting, but also helping to come up with new ideas for new programs and writing new programs and directing new programs, putting together all the stuff that we need for new theater programs.
That's great. And you mentioned the student sit-ins program, and that's probably one of the most popular programs here at the museum. Why don't you talk a little bit about what that is and then what your role within that program has been?
All right. Well, Join the Student Sit-ins is about a 20-25 minute program that is its primary function is to educate people about the Greensboro sit-ins in 1960. And so for, I guess, most people who know their history, they've heard about it. But basically these four guys who were really kids at the time, they were 18 years old, 17 years old, they decided to take action to try to desegregate a Woolworth's lunch counter in Greensboro, North Carolina. Now, these guys were students at North Carolina A&T University. And so what they did was on February 1st, 1960, they walked into this Woolworth's store and sat down at the lunch counter. And the lunch counter was for whites only, and they were all African-Americans. So they sat there, and when the waitresses and manager told them to leave, they didn't leave. They just sat there, and they basically said, you know what, we have, you know, money, we'd like to eat here, you know, we're just as good as anybody else, and, you know, and this is business that you could have, and we're not hurting anyone, we're not messing anything up, but we're just sitting here, we're going to sit here until we're served. They weren't served that first day, but when other people heard about it, they joined mm-hmm. in. And so lots and lots of people, hundreds of people took part in the sit-in, which eventually was successful. And so Chris Wilson, who kind of heads up a lot of our public programs things, especially our theater stuff, and is also the director of the program in African-American culture, mm-hmm. he just kind of said, well, you know, we have this artifact. We have a piece of this lunch counter, a real piece of the lunch counter here. We've had it for years. We're reopening. Museum was closed for about 2 years and to be renovated. And he kind of was thinking, what's something cool that we can do with this to really educate people and also to really show them how big of a deal this was. And he kind of came up with the idea to have a mock sit-in kind of training to get people in seats and have them pretend to be sitting in, and then to kind of ask them, how did that make you feel? And from that, he came up with this whole script where in the show, Join the Student Sit-ins, I played the part of a sit-in trainer. So I would be training a group of people. They say, we want to take part in the sit-ins. What do we have to do? And I'm their trainer, and I say, well, these are the things that you have to do. This is what you have to know. This is what you have to expect. Now, why don't we practice? You four people, come on up here, sit in these seats, and everybody else stand behind them, and we're going to give them an idea of what they have to expect to do.
Now, you know, I heard we were going to get a lot of new soldiers for this army we're creating, but I had no idea I'd have this many new recruits. I got my work cut out for me in getting you all trained. But I'm not complaining at all. You're important. Each and every one of you is essential if we're going to be successful. So, are you all ready for your first sit-in?
We're ready.
Yes.
How about it? You ready to go?
Yes.
No. No, you're not ready yet. Look, You can't just walk in here and sit down and order lunch and expect to change anything. You've got to be prepared, you've got to be motivated, and you've got to be trained. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to get you all ready to stand up by sitting down. And we're going to get you prepared to be as active and strong and powerful as you've ever been and probably ever will be, all by being passive and non-violent.
How was the audience's reaction to this type of program?
The emotional response can be a lot, especially since there are a lot of people still alive who remember the sit-ins and who remember a time in this country when things were very different. And so when they see that commemorated at the museum, I think a lot of people, it triggers something emotionally mm-hmm. in them. Some people, you know, they don't really, the show is very interactive. And so I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with the amount of response that we expect from them. We ask them a lot of questions. We really get, you know, I'll sit right next to people in the audience, you know, and kind of talk to them one-on-one and ask them questions and even put them on the spot. And sometimes people are a little uncomfortable with that. But I think in light of the history that we're trying to get across, most people kind of understand why, mm-hmm. you know, why we're being so engaging and so one-on-one with them.
How do you bring the audience into the story? What's going on that you feel helps them really connect with this historical moment?
You know, one thing that we do, it's really funny and it's interesting that you asked that question, because it's a very difficult thing for many people to connect with the past on a certain level, mm-hmm. especially for what we're trying to do with theater. We're really trying to pull people into 1960, which is really difficult to do, especially for somebody who wasn't alive then. So one of the things that we try to do is we try to really talk to people in a way that they can respond as they would today. Even though we want them to understand that it's 1960, you know, there are certain things that are kind of universal and certain experiences that are universal. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting when you ask people questions. For example, in the script, it's written very well. If I ask you what you think of, if somebody says nonviolent, what do you think of? And see, questions like that are pretty universal, because I think for many people, the answer that they would have given in 1960 is the same as the answer that they would give today, with certain differences. For example, if I were to ask that of someone right now, they might say Nelson Mandela. Mm-hmm. Whereas in 1960, you might not say Nelson Mandela, even if you know something about him. So we get a few, sometimes we get answers and people are thinking of today, but you're still going to say Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You're still mm-hmm. going to say Gandhi. You're still going to say peace. You're still going to say no fighting, pacifism. All these things are things that you can connect with wherever you are and whenever you were born. And so in that way, I think by asking people those kind of questions and really kind of getting them to understand, we want you to be honest. We want your honest answers, because these answers work regardless of what time period we're talking. And the cool thing about that is later on when we discuss it with people, we kind of have a springboard to kind of say, you know, let's not just talk about the history, let's talk about, you know, now, because we make history every day. And so a lot of the choices that we make and the things that we learn about influence history as we make it. And those are the kind of, I think, the things that getting people to think about that, it really helps them to connect. Even though all this happened 50 years ago, it really gets them to connect well with it.
What type of research goes into producing theater performances, say at a museum like the Student Sit-ins?
Sure, a lot. Now, the thing is, I'm very lucky, and there's also a lady, her name is Azania, and she does the program as well. Mm-hmm. The two of us are very, very fortunate. And the reason for that is because in terms of first account source material, we actually have video. And film of people doing these things, the very things that we're portraying. Because of that, we have it a lot easier than someone who is, say, doing something that's set in the 1770s, you know, and they really do have to be on their P's and Q's in terms of reading it all, and there are lots of resources for those people, but we are very fortunate to have those resources. Can't stress research enough.
Right.
And we found a lot of those things. There's a lot of video. And there's a lot of it that's free online that you can see, mm-hmm. but we also have some on DVD. We have recordings of people talking. You know, one of the best things for me doing this to have is to actually have the people that this involved you know, and speaking, either on mic or on camera, speaking about their experiences.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool because you get not only, you know, kind of the cadence and the things that you want for an actor, and the history, the things you want as a historian, but you really can kind of see the passion that these people had for this. You know, that at the end of the day, these people were really putting their well-being on the line to change the country. Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? When somebody does that, you know, what does it look like? How do they feel? And these are the things that are important for us to hit, I think, both as a historian and an actor, because the feeling is what you're trying to get at. If you're doing a program, it doesn't matter if it's an artifact on an exhibit wall. It doesn't matter if it's a theater program. It doesn't matter if it's an outside performance, some kind of musical performance. Whatever it is, you really are trying to touch someone, you know, emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the academic part. The academic part is great, but if that's all you want, you know, you can just read a few books, go online. When we actually show someone, you know, these are the ruby slippers. This is, you know, a piece of an old house that someone lived in the Revolutionary War. This is, you know, a theater piece where someone's portraying somebody from history, or even someone fictional but in a historical time period. You're really trying to tug at someone's heartstrings. So how do you do that? And for us as actors, having this wealth of resources that we have has been really great, because these things affect us emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can see what this person in 1960 was doing, and what their feelings were, what their emotions were, and what that made other people feel like surrounding them. Taking that and being able to use that as a research source, really, really great, man. Really great. And obviously you want to read as much as you can. I got to tell you, I'm learning something new at least every other day about these sit-ins. I'm learning a new name, something new that happened. And you want to do that because people will ask questions, and they really want to know. Some things we don't know, some things are very, very hard for us to figure out, but I kind of want to go the extra mile to figure those things out as much as I can.
Yep.
Because these are things that people really want to know and really want to ask, and it brings up all these issues that now we can take and use today. You know, whether it's just learning something, or whether it's, you know, someone, you never know who you meet who's going to talk to someone else, who knows someone else, who really is trying to do something to move this country forward. And what we can learn from these guys is really, really cool. So it's a lot of work, and it never ends. You're mm-hmm. always constantly looking at new things, making sure your information is right, learning new information. But at the end of the day, it's cool because that's what helps the program grow and stay fresh in our minds, is learning those new things.
It sounds like you're using a lot of traditional research methods and, you know, reading and using oral histories.
Mm-hmm.
The history process isn't that different from something that would be going on in the classroom or people doing research on their own. But the product is a little bit different. The final historical product that you're producing. Well, thanks for being on the show. This has been great.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Freedom land. Together.
I'm on my way, oh Lord, to freedom land.
Pretty good.
I asked my mother.
That was Xavier Carnegie discussing his role in historic theater here at the National Museum of American History. Be sure to join us again next month on the History Explorer podcast as we take another look into what goes on behind the scenes here at the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. This podcast has been made possible by a grant from the Verizon Foundation.
If she don't go, going any high. If she don't go, going any high. I'm on my way, oh Lord, to freedom land. Once again, I'm on my way.
To freedom land.
I'm on my way to freedom land.